Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of Let's Go Read. I'm joined today by someone I think most of our readers will recognize, Anthony Castrovince of MLB.com. He is a Clevelander and spent many years on the Tribe beat before becoming a national writer for MLB.com. And he's talking to me today because he wrote a great new book, A Fan's Guide to Baseball Analytics. And the greatest compliment I can pay him on this book is that it is his voice all the way through. And for those people who are familiar with him, that is definitely a good thing, because he did a great job when he was writing about the Indians, and all of his stuff since then with MLB.com has been eminently enjoyable. And so thank you for joining me, Anthony, and thank you for the book.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, and many interactions with the Let's Go Tribe universe over the years. So nice to communicate here in podcast form.
Yeah, and you wrote in the introduction of your book that you created this book based on an email from someone, an accountant, right?
That was something along those lines. It wasn't exactly clear. Yeah, a former CPA and financial analyst who did not like the numbers, believe it or not. Yeah. But yeah, it could have been. I've gotten some variation of that email many times, but that one happened to be not long before I started the book, and I had put out a piece about the NL MVP race in 2018 and just analyzing it from an analytical perspective. And, you know, pretty much all the stats I used in the piece were, you know, WAR and weighted runs created plus and OPS plus, stuff of that nature, and not, you know, the tried and true numbers that we all grew up with. And this former CPA and financial analyst, you know, it was even too number driven for him. So he took issue with that. And as I said, I've had those interactions in the past. And if anything, I felt it was my mistake as a writer for not providing the proper context, you know, within the text for what those numbers are relaying. And we've since cleaned up our site to where we can easily link to, you know, definitions of those things. But I thought the book would be helpful for, you know, people to turn to as a reference point to not only have the definition, but a real discussion of where these stats are derived from, what they're trying to convey, what the context is in terms of just what is good and what is bad. I think we all know what a 300 hitter is, or we feel like we do. But you know, a 300 woba, you know, we don't grow up with that. So we're not as clear on that. So I thought this book, as much as some of these numbers have been around for, gosh, in some cases, 20, 30 years by this point, I think there's still a large audience to learn about them, or even the people who are familiar with them to learn more about them and where they came from.
Exactly. We at Let's Go Tribe are amateurs. It's a fan site, but we pride ourselves on knowing StatCast and FanGraphs pretty Absolutely. Well. But I still found a lot of interesting stuff in your research, in your writing about these stats. And I do think that this is a book that anyone can turn to, whether you are completely new to this or have been following baseball and advanced analytics for a while. Because it's so accessible and you really break things down on a level that I think most people can understand. I didn't do the research on this, but it might be the only book with a citation of Everybody Loves Raymond and Ecclesiastes.
It's possible there's others out there. You know, I haven't read everything out there, but it's possible this is the first. Let's hope. I think, you know, I don't come at things from a mathematical perspective. Like, that's not my bent. And so I didn't come into sports writing to write in that style. I came to tell a story. And I've just found over the years of covering baseball that, boy, the advanced analytics sure help you tell the story, you know. And there's, you know, there's personal profiles and stuff of that nature where you don't need stats to tell the story, but quite often in telling the story of a season, you know, the numbers help a lot, and the advanced numbers really help a lot to get a true you know, telling of what went down or didn't go down. And I think it was helpful for me to, you know, come at it from that perspective. There's other outlets out there, other avenues people can go to learn about this stuff. But very often I found they're written by people who are of that mathematical nature. There's nothing wrong with that, but they communicate this stuff in a different way. I try to really have a conversation with my readers and make it fun and make it, you know, lighthearted. And that's, as you mentioned, you know, Everybody Loves Raymond sneaks in there in a discussion about RBIs and why RBIs is a faulty stat. I'll let people check that out. But,
I just wanted to make it approachable. I wanted to make it so you're not talking down to people. You're just talking with people and not making people feel dumb because they still like batting average and RBIs. Because I think there's a lot of, you know, writing out there that does that. And I think it's a bit of a turnoff. I think the sport at large should be doing a better job of, you know, trying to be accessible to fans, not inaccessible. And I think sometimes these numbers, you know, your WARs and WHIPs and WOBAs, et cetera, can be a little intimidating to the casual fan who is more familiar with batting average and RBIs. And I tried to make this just more embraceable and accessible.
Yeah. And you know, you said something interesting there. It may not be that everyone wants to know what someone's expected WOBA is, but it is something that's been going on for a long time. You cite an 1888 Sporting News article about whether win is a good stat or not. And so I wouldn't accuse you of having the hubris of solving our debate here and converting everybody. But I mean, when you obviously set out to make something that's going to help further discussion and make people have more nuanced conversations about
right.
MVPs and things like that.
Yeah. And I don't like, you know, I don't hate the old stats. I'd certainly go to great lengths in the first section of this book to explain why they're faulty and where they, you know, where they swing and miss, pun intended. But I do see the value of, I mean, you know, CC Sabathia retired with north of 200 wins. I mean, that tells you a lot about CC Sabathia's career, his career win total. Because to get to that win total, I mean, you have to have, there's a lot of durability. There's a lot of going deep into games built into that, you know. So those 250 wins or so, he earned them, you know, he got there. We all know that you can be propped up by a good offense in accumulating wins over the course of a season, over the course of a career. But, you know, you don't get to 200 wins by total accident. So I think there's value to the players who play this game, to those old numbers. And a couple of years ago, I remember doing a poll for MLB.com. We polled like 75 players or something like that, or what's your favorite stat? And, you know, a majority of them still lean towards the old school stuff. I think Mike Trout's favorite stat was run scored. You know, it wasn't, he's the poster boy for wins above replacement, but his favorite stat was runs. And I get that. I mean, I get for the people who play this game, I think you're seeing more that the players who come up, there's an understanding of the stat casty elements and this other stuff. But generally speaking, I mean, these guys chase hits, they chase wins, they chase runs. That stuff still means something to them. And I respect that very much. But we also have to acknowledge, you know, how a win total can be adversely affected by your offense or it can be propped up by your offense. And Jacob deGrom is, of course, you know, a chief example of where wins did not tell any fraction of the story of his season. I guess they did tell a story of his season in that he got no run support, but it didn't tell anything about, you know, the value of his pitching in 2018 when he had 10 wins and was one of the greatest pitching seasons we've ever seen. So, you know, it's important, I think, to look at it from all sides. You can respect that players still respect these numbers, but you also have to, you know what you're looking at when you're looking at them. You have to be willing to go to the next level of statistic to truly evaluate a season or a career.
Yeah. In the same vein that you asked the players, what is your favorite statistic and how to either compile a narrative or just to be impressed at these guys and their superhuman feats?
My favorites that like my go-to nowadays, and they have their imperfections too, I'm sure. But like if I want to just get the nitty gritty of how a guy's season is going or went, I'll look at, if I call up his baseball reference page, I'll look at his OPS plus or his ERA plus. That's the first stat my eye will go towards. Or obviously, you know, for a hitter, OPS plus and weighted runs created plus are kind of two variations of the same idea. Weighted runs created plus is actually a little better, and that's explained in the book. But pretty similar overall. And that's, you know, that's on the Fangraphs page. So that's part of it too, is sometimes the accessibility of stats, it's not easy when you have to explain where to go to find, you know, a very specific website to find a very specific stat, you know, that can be hard to embrace as well. But I tried to, you know, lay it all out there for the reader. But yeah, if I call up a guy's baseball reference page, I'm looking at his OPS plus for a hitter, I'm looking at his ERA plus for a pitcher, and then you can obviously go from there. But that's a quick and dirty way to see how he performed relative to the league average, which is, I think, the most important thing, because, you know, it's one thing to hit 30 home runs in 2019 when the ball is flying like crazy. And it's another thing to hit 30 home runs just 4 or 5 years earlier, where pitchers were really, you know, dominating. So those are, you know, a 30 home run season is not the same from year to year. So that's why I think those plus stats that do relate it to league average and also take the ballpark context into account, I think those are good starting points.
And another thing you mentioned in the book is that there are stats yet to be developed. And when I think about other books that I've read in the last couple of years, like The MVP Machine or even Future Value that came out earlier this year, a lot of talk is on the developmental side with those and how players are tapping into new technologies. Do you see that bringing more advanced stats that could be more useful that goes along with TrackMan in baseball and all that?
Yeah, I do. I think, as I point out in the book, I mean, you don't want to say that what we have now is the be all and end all. It's not going to get much better. But in some ways, we've kind of already crossed a great divide with where we are. I think it's more about nuance from this point forward. I think your point is a good one. I think where the real developments will come in the years to come is how do you apply this stuff to player development? Kylie McDaniel has a great book about that right now called Future Value that, gets into the player development aspect of this. And I think that's that's where it's all headed really. But as far as what we'll have publicly available, I mean, I don't think there's going to be some great leaps and bounds. I think it's more about tweaking what we have and improving what we have. You know, it's funny, just since I finished, I wrapped this book around the time of the World Series or shortly thereafter last year, and just with the print schedule being what it is. And I knew we were close on infield outs above average, which is a defensive stat. I didn't know for sure that it would be ready for 2020 at that point, and sure enough it was. So I had to shoehorn in a discussion of that within the defense chapter. But that, you know, frankly, outs above average now, because it involves infield as well. And for those who don't know, this is a stat available from us at MLB.com and Baseball Savant via the StatCast data, which is a much better metric for defense. It's even a step above defensive runs saved and UZR, which we've been using for several years now. Outs above average is really next level because it shows it takes into account, you know, the difficulty of getting to every play. And so we had it for outfield prior to 2020. We unveiled it for 2020 back when, you know, we were still counting on a regular season at that point. But to have it for the infield now is a huge step forward. And hopefully that'll continue to be fine tuned and improved upon. And, you know, catcher defense is still, an area that's a little shaky right now to evaluate. And hopefully that'll get better in the years to come. And hopefully all of this will help wins above replacement become, you know, more reliable than it is now. I think there's certainly an argument. We've seen it with some players where perhaps the defensive end is being a little overrated, overstated in a guy's WAR tally. You might be having a pretty average offensive season, but you know, he's high on the WAR charts because of his defense. And is that truly where he ought to be? I think we've seen a lot of cases of that in recent years. So that's what I'm saying is I think it's going to be more about fine tuning what we have as opposed to coming out with some, you know, the next great metric. I think it's, we're going to take these incremental steps.
Right. And with MLB moving to, is it Hawkeye? That's the tennis technology. We'll get even better stuff. The one thing that won't help us with that I think about and I thought in your book is the debate about former players. And I think the one most close to Clevelanders' hearts right now is Omar Vizquel. And is he a Hall of Fame player? His defense was amazing to watch, but then these advanced statistics are telling us like he wasn't really Ozzie Smith like we thought perhaps at the time. And what do you think about that and how these numbers can inform the past discussions and getting guys like Lou Whitaker, what he's owed for his career?
Yeah. I mean, Lou Whitaker is a great example. In fact, as I said, with the deadline for the book, I had basically an alternate version of where Lou Whitaker comes up in the WAR chapter because his career baseball reference WAR is 75.1. That's the highest of any Hall eligible position player who's not tied to performance enhancing drugs, who's not in the Hall of Fame. So there's a great argument for Lou Whitaker to get in the Hall of Fame. And quite frankly, I was kind of hoping and in some way expecting him to be voted in on the Veterans Committee last December. And I was fully ready and hoping to make a late substitute of that section of the book. And then sure enough, he did not get voted in. So that paragraph, unfortunately, holds true for now. But yeah, I mean, he's very much deserving. And the Omar discussion for us Clevelanders is it's tough, man. I mean, I get the sabermetric argument against Omar Vizquel's candidacy because, you know, again, to get back to OPS plus, he had only two seasons in his entire career where he was an above average offensive contributor. And, you know, the defense, as great as it was, it's not otherworldly from an analytical perspective. I think, and it was probably always going to be this way. I mean, the clearest argument for Omar Vizquel is about accumulation, is about, you know, the ability to post up at a demanding defensive position and get, frankly, getting the opportunity at that position into his 40s and to play as many games at shortstop as he did. And again, I mean, sometimes it's used as a knock against a guy he compiled, but I mean, he compiled, and that's not easily done. He had almost 3,000 hits, you know, he had almost 3,000 games played, and no matter, you know, how nuanced you want to get with the defensive metrics, I mean, boy, he sure did pass the eye test as an elite defender at shortstop. So, you know, I would lean toward, and some of that is probably some Cleveland bias seeping in, but I would lean towards voting for Omar Vizquel for the Hall of Fame. But I totally get that, you know, it's a difficult discussion. Sabermetric, it's hard to make that argument analytically. It's more about, you know, the reputation and the accumulation. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I'm more of a big Hall guy myself anyway, so I don't get too tripped up by this stuff. You know, if you really want to break it down to who truly deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, you come down to Willie Mays and Babe Ruth and Hank Aaron and be like a 3 or 4 man Hall of Fame. But I'd rather have, you know, just the great players of their time and let that be reflected in the Hall of Fame and let people have fun with it. You know, it's especially when you go to induction weekend, you know, it's fun when there's actually Hall of Famers there. So let's get the more the merrier.
Sure. You know, that's all the questions I had about your book, unless there's something you want to add about the book, and then maybe we could talk about the state of baseball in 2020 a little while you're here.
The only thing I would add is Father's Day is fast approaching, and I wrote this book with my dad in mind. He said when I started, he goes, this book is for people in my generation. So it's kind of an audience of one. I said, if he can understand what the heck I'm writing about, then anybody can. Because it's pretty much dads. It's written towards dads, if anybody. So a perfect Father's Day gift.
Yes, indeed. I'd agree with that. I think if I had gotten that for Father's Day, I'd be pretty happy about it. Now, there's not anything new to talk about here in 2020, except are we going to see MLB baseball in 2020? And I don't know if you have any insight into that or not.
I sure hope so. Just like everyone else, it's such a dicey proposition. There's obviously been much made of the financial elements at stake here, and you know, how do you divide up a few billion dollars, which is you know, both a fun conversation and a not so fun conversation these times when there's so many people out of work, and it's unattractive to have an argument over money, and you know, they're hoping to resolve that here pretty soon. But still, I mean, as much as that is the sexy conversation and seems to draw the most bandwidth and attention on Twitter and the like, it's still the virus is still the biggest threat to, you know, completing some semblance of a season. It's a pretty ambitious thing to, you know, try to do an 82 game season, which is obviously the plan of the moment. And plans are always subject to change, in these circumstances. You hope they can get it in before, the nation at large kind of flares up again. And I say that because it's not like this thing's gone away. You know, I mean, a lot of people are acting like it's gone away because the weather got warm, but it's not gone away. So we still don't have a great handle on this thing from a testing standpoint. And it's just when you read the protocols for what it would take to stage a season, it's like a military operation. You know, it's a lot of tests. It's a lot of changes of native behavior that are going to be difficult to pull off. So I sure hope they can. I think all of us in baseball have a stake in them pulling it off, but you know, by and large, you just want people to stay healthy, and you hope they can find some way to do that.
Now, I don't know if you were at the game in Baltimore when they did it without fans, but what would you think it would be like covering games without anyone in the stadium?
Yeah, I was not at that game. Those games in Baltimore. It's kind of hard. It's weird how we are all kind of taking that for granted at this point. Like, oh, there'll be baseball and there won't be fans. I think in some ways we're overlooking how weird that really is. Yeah, I think we've gotten so used to that idea in our heads just because, yeah, how could you have fans there under these circumstances? Maybe as the year evolves, but I personally doubt it. But yeah, it's going to be strange if you do an entire season with no fans in the stands. And I was talking to someone the other day. They brought up the idea of maybe you pipe in atmospheric noises based on the game condition. So, you know, if there's a, you know, runner on second in a one run game, late innings, you know, maybe you pump in some ambivalent noise. I don't know. But it strikes me as something that could really change outcomes. I think it's just human nature. We're talking about a stats book earlier, and that's why I always try to remember the human element of the game. You know, it's not all numbers driven. These are human beings playing. And I think that, you know, fan engagement, fan noise, all those things really can affect outcomes. You know, they affect people's heartbeats. They affect how they perform in high pressure situations. So you remove that and you are fundamentally changing the game. And we would never know, you know, how the outcome would have been different, but it's certainly a interesting experiment, to say the least, to think about a season with no fans. I think that's in some ways an underrated element of all this, just because there are so many other big picture conversations happening. But it's not to be lost that this would be a season like any other, just from that perspective.
Yeah, I don't know if many people are paying attention, but the German Soccer League came back and something like less than 50% of home teams are winning games right now. And I've tried to think about who that would benefit most in MLB, and maybe Houston not hearing the boos that they would be getting. Yeah. But I don't know if Cleveland would have much of an effect on that, on that front at all.
Well, I mean, you know, the obvious joke is I've covered some seasons in Cleveland where there weren't too many fans. And I know I covered one. I remember one doubleheader in particular, a makeup doubleheader that might as well have not had any fans there. So, but yeah, I mean, the Astros, it's been pointed out before that if anybody, it's weird to talk about anybody benefiting from the situation, but obviously a lot of heat was taken off the Astros, you know, relative to where things were headed and what they look like now. I'm sure they'd rather have the alternative of facing the music and playing a full season, but boy, yeah. That conversation changed in a hurry, and maybe the Astros will somehow come up with a vaccine and then they could become heroes in all of this. That would be an amazing twist on the story.
I think I'd have to cheer for them at that point for sure. Any discussion of baseball and Cleveland has to come back around to Francisco Lindor and how he is affected by this. And we don't know what the market's going to be like when he's up for free agency because of the CBA, because of the pandemic and all the money lost. But is there, besides just simply missing out on his prime right now, is there anything that you can think of that is important for Cleveland fans to think with regard to Francisco Lindor and his situation?
Well, I'm always hyper realistic in all these scenarios, and sometimes that rubs, you know, fans of the team the wrong way, and I get it. But I mean, you just have to be realistic that you know, a top five type player in MLB, how often do they sign you know, forever in a market of this size? And if they do, how well does that work out? I mean, the history is not great in terms of, you know, staging a great team around such a player who's, you know, compensated relative to their worth, which is obviously very high for Francisco Lindor. So I've always been of the realistic mindset that, look, this guy's not going to finish his career a Cleveland Indian. So how do you maximize his value? And, you know, I think last winter was the time to do that. Not that I wanted to see it happen, but just realistically, you know, that was the time to extract maximum value for him. And now, unfortunately, that's all the more true. You know, I think we're seeing the season kind of diminish before our eyes and his value diminish before our eyes. And it really is difficult. You hate to see it because, you know, you groom a player of that nature and then the conversation gets ugly, you know, as you get towards the end of that contractual control. It's a difficult conversation. And the fact of the matter is, I don't see coming out of this pandemic, you know, even if we have half a season this year, I mean, I think it sure seems like teams are going to be scaling back. So what's the market going to be for Francisco Lindor his value in arbitration is, you know, it starts to get pretty steep, and that limits his trade value. You know, trades operate on the premise of surplus value, and the more money you make, no matter how great a player you are, that's going to diminish your surplus value. And only being, you know, after whatever 2020 looks like, to only have 1 year of control, that limits it as well. We saw it with Mookie Betts, where, you know, the Red Sox had to attach a bad David Price contract, and even then their return was pretty suspect. So, man, I don't love it. I don't love it. And you just hope that whatever shape 2020 takes, people could say whatever they want. I've seen there's already been discussion about, I think Jason Stark had a piece the other day, like, and talking to Terry Francona about, you know, if the Indians did win in 2020, whatever shape that takes, would that be a cheapened title? And the answer is no, of course not. If the Indians are standing at the end of the season, that is awesome for the Indians and their fans. And let's hope it comes to that, because we know the clock is ticking on Frankie, unfortunately.
Yeah, let's hope there can be a parade too. Some kind of safe social distance parade. Yeah,
we'll take it. We'll take it.
Yeah.
You have to elongate the route a little bit to keep everybody distant, but it would be worth it.
Absolutely. Well, Anthony, thank you very much for joining me today and talking about your book and more. Again, the book is A Fan's Guide to Baseball Analytics, Why WAR, WHIP, WOBA, and Other Advanced Sabermetrics Are Essential to Understanding Modern Baseball. It's out now. Makes a great Father's Day gift. Thank you, Anthony. I really appreciate talking with you.
I really appreciate you having me. Thanks for the support of the book.